It's the ERP Confab. I'm David Essex, Industry Editor at Search ERP, with my colleague, News Editor Jim O'Donnell. In 2013, Gartner introduced the concept of postmodern ERP, predicting the breakup of the old monolithic ERP into loosely coupled and usually cloud-based collections of business applications. Now a new Gartner coinage, composable ERP, is taking off. Is it just the old idea and new packaging? We asked Mike Gay, a former Gartner analyst who was instrumental in developing the thinking behind postmodern and composable ERP, now a vice president at the ERP vendor Infor. Mike, you've worked with a lot of ERP and MRP systems, you know, going back to the MRP days, as a consultant, a system integrator. You've installed and consulted on PeopleSoft, other ERP brands. And so you've really seen the evolution of ERP from on-premises and mainframes to client server, and then more recently to the cloud. When you were at Gartner, you were there when Gartner came out in 2013 with this concept of postmodern ERP, which is this idea of the breakup of the single monolithic ERP in favor of a more like loosely coupled federated system of business applications. So now the term seems to be composable ERP, and I'm wondering if you can explain how the two differ, if they even do differ at all.
Enterprise capabilities were kind of emerging. And so you had this group at Gartner that was talking about, you know, composable capabilities, and we're writing composable business capabilities. So Yafin reached out to us, and we came up with this concept of enterprise business capabilities. And so what they're now calling composable ERP, there was a couple of research notes written about the fourth era of ERP, and we called it enterprise business capabilities, which we were actually talking about this right when I left Gartner in early 2020, mm-hmm. which is, what do we call this? Because we needed to be consistent, right? We needed to say you can't have ERP called X and this other phenomenon called Y. So I was talking with the chief of research and Yafim and some other folks at Gartner, and that's what ended up becoming composable ERP. So let's talk a little bit about composable ERP and what makes it different from postmodern ERP. Postmodern ERP was essentially a strategy that was used when it looked like people were going to piecemeal replace parts of their suite. So let's say, for example, you're a huge manufacturing company, and I don't want to get in trouble by mentioning one, but let's say that you manufacture airplanes or airplane engines, and you've got this system that you bought 15 or 20 years ago. You've customized the snot out of it. You know, you built it so that it can manage your quality control, your FAA regulations. You've got a ton of custom code. You put a lot of intellectual property into over the last 10 or 15 years, and it's humming. Is there a reason to rip that out just to rip that out? No. But at the same time, the commensurate financial applications and HR applications that went with that are really not suitable for what you want to be able to do in terms of finance, financial reporting, flexibility, et cetera, et cetera. So maybe you go out there and you get a state-of-the-art HR module and a state-of-the-art financial system and you plug them in. Now, even that scenario, which seems fairly straightforward to understand, I would get calls from some of those types of companies who would say things like, well, can we leave our supply chain and manufacturing on premise and replace it with our financial system? And I would say, sure. What's your system of record? What's your system of record for vendors? Because the reason suites emerged in the first place was, you know, you had a situation where, like, for example, just AP and purchasing, right? Purchasing is part of the supply chain, no question about it. Accounts payable is part of the finance department. Who adds vendors? Who manages vendors? And so who gets to authorize purchase orders? If I need somebody, so all of those things, it wasn't major, but what I would say to them is you need to really think through, do I want to break a procure to pay process? Do I want to break an order to cash process? Anytime you're breaking a major business process, it's got a significant transaction flow and significant data elements that you need to keep consistent. You really need to think about whether you want to break a part of vendor delivered capability in that respect. That was part of the postmodern philosophy. Now you move forward, that very same aircraft manufacturer, you're looking at the situation going, okay, still have that same scenario, but now vendors are delivering that same supply chain manufacturing capability with built-in IoT capabilities, built-in AI and machine learning capabilities. So it can start doing things like monitor what's going on the shop floor, do real-time analysis of whether there's going to be a predictive maintenance issue on the shop floor that could stop a machine. So you start to see manufacturing execution systems, manufacturing systems actually start to get more modern, more flexible. And what was in 2013 a no-brainer decision to leave that system in place on premise forever, now isn't such a clear decision anymore. And now you've got a situation where if the vendor that I bought my HR and financial system in the cloud, maybe I replace that manufacturing system because it's going to be easier for me to build that custom code using the tools I have available to me today. And now I will have a system that can last me another 25 years. That's one big piece of it. Now, composable ERP really talks about an ERP system surrounded by what we were calling then the business capabilities ecosystem. The coin term for that these days in the market is enterprise application platform. Most vendors selling an ERP system in the cloud, a critical component of that. And one of the things that we were starting to talk about at Gartner was, if you're an organization that's looking at going to move your ERP system to the cloud, one of the things you really have to look at is what is the vendor delivered to you for an enterprise application platform. Mm-hmm. Now, this goes to the core of what composable ERP is. Composable ERP, and there's actually a blog post I can send you the link to that I wrote a while ago that kind of touches on one of the notes that was written. And it talks about how ERP is now the core of a system of applications that are surrounded. So, for example, do you know what AP system Uber uses? Nope. Do you know what the payable and the collection system is? Nope. Should you? Nope. Should you care? No. It just needs to work. Uber would not work if you didn't have reliable, you know, capability. Just give your credit card to the app and then know that you were going to charge for your ride and only your ride. And that the vendor was, you know, the driver was going to get paid. You were only going to get charged with the, you know, so if that whole payable system and the collection system in the back end doesn't work, Uber doesn't. So an ERP system is essentially a massive bundle of these reliable, bulletproof business processes that have been in the market for 15, 20 years that just work. Inventory distribution, procure to pay, order to cash, hire to retire. Everything you can think of that a business needs to just execute that needs to be reliable and work still needs to be there. You still need to have that. And when I talk to people who say, oh, well, composable ERP, I can just go build this and build that and build that. I said, yeah, good luck to that. Just because you can do something doesn't mean you should do something. And so in terms of what vendors are doing in this space, when you look at the vendors who are successful, look at the vendors who made the leaders quadrant on the last Gartner Magic Quadrant, you'll find some consistent themes. They basically took the approach of, okay, we're going to build or move an application. We're going to put a modern platform underneath it that makes it easy to extend and easy to integrate into the suite. Easy. And I mean easy. Like the casual power user I was talking to you about can do this. Massimo Pizzini and Yafim Nattis wrote a lot of research on citizen integrators, citizen developers. And exactly what they meant was, I don't have to be an expert writing code to be able to plug an application into my ERP system.
So it sounds like these enterprise application platforms and some of these other integration tools you've been talking about, they were the answer to the big question, how are you ever going to integrate all of these disparate apps?
Exactly. So when you take a look at it, if I go to the cloud, what are some of the fundamental differences between an on-premise ERP suite and a cloud ERP suite? There's a couple of big ones, huge ones. One, I don't get access to the database schema, right? I don't get access to the core source code, and it's deliberate. Because what the vendors want to be able to do is the vendors want to be able to deliver regular new feature functionality and have the consumers adopt it quickly and easily. Only way to do that is if you know that when you write code as a vendor, that backend process you're plugging into is consistent from customer to customer to customer, right? So you know you're basically adding this feature functionality to AP. You're adding this feature functionality to supply chain. You're adding this capability to the HR and payroll system. But everybody who's running your suite is running the same version of that suite with the same architecture. That's the only way that works, okay? Now, having said that, nobody of any size at all implements an ERP suite without doing something to it. You don't just drop the CD in or load the download the software and boom, up you're going. You're going to do changes. You're going to add tables. You're going to add capabilities. You're going to integrate it to another external system. So the vendors have to provide a way to do that that makes it easy. And that is essentially the enterprise application platform. Let's say, for example, that you're a vendor like Infor or Microsoft. The Infor platform is called Infor OS. Each vendor has their own. Now, Infor OS is built on the Amazon platform. When you talk about things like Microsoft and Oracle have their own platforms that do similar functions, which is they access the metadata that exists for the suites and the application that they're selling in the cloud. So if I want to do things like create a warranty tracking system and I need sales order number, it's going to grab the sales order number from your sales order system. So I don't have to worry about how long is the field, what type is the field, what else do I have to do to make sure that I can actually enter in a sales order, like the customer number has to exist. Now, ironically, PeopleSoft had something like this 20 years ago. PeopleTools was a very good example of this, where you could literally, if you had the rights, you could drag and drop these fields right out of the database and just build your own form. Okay. It's like building a Microsoft Access form. If you've ever built a form in Microsoft Access, that's the kind of capability you're going to find from vendors these days. And it makes the ability to build things out and to integrate things in much, much simpler. Now, if you go take a look at some of the documentation that's been produced by Gartner in terms of composable ERP, what you'll see is that even Gartner admits that there are certain clusters of capabilities and processes that make sense to buy from a vendor. Why would you build a procure-to-pay process? There's a billion of them out there. Just go grab one. If you need to add some specific contract management capabilities that are not standard to what a vendor delivers, build it or buy it. And if you're going to build something, fine. If you're going to buy something, fine. But you want to buy something that basically is easy to plug in. One of the things that customers are going to want to be able to do with this, in addition to the flexibility, is do much better analytics. If you look at the core underlying Microsoft Azure, AWS, and the Google platforms, they have certain consistencies. One of them is the vendors are all providing this integration capability. They all have like a low-code, no-code capability. Many of them have things like business process management. So if I want to tweak my business processes, it's native to the platform. And in the case of Infor, we're actually building the applications using some of those tools so that we get native business process management capability. The other thing that the Amazon platform offers us is the ability to actually pull the data out of the application into the Amazon system in a data lake where we can do AI analysis of the data. We can do machine learning utilizing the Amazon tools. Microsoft uses the Azure platform to do exactly the same thing. Oracle uses their own platform and other platforms to do the same thing. In the old days, if I had an ERP system and I wanted to actually get useful information out of it, I typically would pull stuff out of it and put them into a data warehouse. I had some kind of a tool like a Cognos, right? I would do an extract, transform, load, run it into the data marts, have the data marts out there. Now those capabilities tend to exist as part of the platform. The platform itself provide some of those capabilities. Now, depending on the vendor and depending what their origin of their applications were, Oracle's applications are both on the Oracle Fusion middleware platform. So that's where they get a lot of their integration capabilities from. Infor, for example, we moved our applications from on-premise through a stage of hosted, single-tenant, multi-tenant. So in the period between 2014 and 2018, Infor went through a three-stage process to take on-premise applications, host them, and then basically make them single tenant and then eventually multi-tenant. The core code for the applications is in many cases the same, but the architecture of the application that you buy from Infor today is different than what you bought 7 or 8 years ago, because what you bought 7 or 8 years ago was essentially LN, M3, S3 that was hosted on a platform. And now those core code capabilities are still there, but the application's architected to actually be multi-tenant SaaS. When I talked earlier about the advancement of integration tools and capabilities, one of the things, and I've been away from Gartner now for 2 years, but one of the things that was really intriguing me was the work that the research analysts were doing in that team regarding how application integration vendors were starting to use AI or machine learning. Mm-hmm. Probably machine learning is better. People tend to confuse those two terms, but machine learning really is about, if I'm connecting this field with that field, then I'm learning that that field and this field are actually the same field. I don't have to do that all the time. The system will start to learn that, oh, when you say this, it actually means that. We were starting to see vendors not just sell APIs, but packaged API capabilities. All right. So I'll just pick on Microsoft and Infor. I'll use us. It used to be like you had, let's say, Microsoft CRM and you had Infor order management. You wanted to tie those two things together. Well, you have better API capabilities, but now what you were seeing vendors deliver, and this is just an example, okay? So I'm not sitting here saying, go ask one of your vendors to buy this product. But you were seeing them sell you things like, I'm integrating this product CRM with this product order management system. And there are a certain set of integration capabilities that were sold as a bundle. You basically were able to buy the integration between vendor A's CRM and vendor B's order management system on the market. And maybe you tweak it a little bit, but 70 or 80% of what you want is already there. If you think about that for a minute, What that really means is that the entire enterprise application ecosystem is now going to more of an approach where I can actually go grab whatever I want and plug it into my backend system. Mm-hmm. Does this mean that I should rip out my supply chain system? You really need to have a good reason to do that, because you're still going to be creating a lot of work for yourself. The advice we used to give people at Gartner was, look, anytime you start disrupting a delivered major business process, make sure you understand what the business reason for doing it is, because you're going to create a lot of work for yourself. You want your IT resources to be shifted away from maintenance activities to true value-added activities. If you take a look at one of the big advantages of moving to the cloud, I just said a while ago that I don't get access to the database schema. So I don't need a DBA to do what a DBA used to do if I was running SAP on-premise. I don't have the same kind of network administration capabilities required at my data center, because my data center is now in Microsoft or Amazon or Google or Oracle somewhere. So what do I do with those resources? Well, you basically retool those resources and the money that you were spending on maintenance activities to more value-added activities. If you go to any, say, Fortune 5000 company and say, okay, Mr. IT department, Mr. CIO, I'm going to free up 30, 40% of your resources. That's a massive gain in productivity, right? Because most IT organizations have a backlog of requests they can't manage. So when you take into account both the technology advances in the market and the fact that now IT resources don't have to do routine activities, it should create a massive productivity gain and a massive advancement for most organizations. The opportunity is there if they take advantage of it.
Jim, you probably have a couple of questions you'd like to ask.
Yeah, well, first of all, thanks for the depth of those, the explanation you were giving. Can you tell us sort of what maybe some are the thorniest challenges of you know, putting this together fully?
Sure. I think there's a couple of things that come to mind immediately. The first one is, if I was to say that the number one call we got from customers expressing a challenge with SaaS ERP, essentially, we used to get the question, well, can I have composable ERP without SaaS ERP cloud, right? And the answer is technically yes. But most of those on-premise applications were not architected to be as easy to integrate with some of this other stuff. So you really have to have the modern architecture. Now, there's some vendors who actually started in the cloud and built their applications on modern platforms that enable that. So the first one was, most customers were not prepared for the frequency of updates from the vendor. Think about the mentality behind on-premise ERP. There were a couple of big challenges. The first one was, those of us that have been in the market for a long time, you implement an ERP system, it's not very much fun. You basically go through a year or two, or sometimes even more, of putting the thing in. By the time you're done, everybody has ERP fatigue in a major fashion. So then the vendor says, guess what? Next year, there's an upgrade. I'll see you in 3 years, okay? So if you think about this, we started our ERP implementation. I'm just making this up as an example. We started our ERP implementation in January of 2020. We finished in, say, June of 2021, so 18 months. During the course of that implementation, the first phase is a fit gap analysis. And we're like, okay, well, Jim says, I need ABC. We had custom code that did this for me, and I really need to run my operations. I need ABC. Is it in the vendor's system? Well, there's kind of something there, but it's not really very useful. So I'm going to do a customization, or I'm going to fill that gap by writing code somehow. Then you look at it and say, well, when am I going to get the next feature functionality from the vendor that has this capability in it? Well, if it's 2020 and we're doing this and we're going to finish in 2021, we're not going to do an upgrade till 2025 or 2026, probably. And even then, it's probably not going to be perfect. The level of effort you put into designing it, building it, testing it, and maintaining it, you're making an assumption it's got a 6 to 10 year life cycle. And so you're going to put a certain level of effort into that. And that's pervasive. Everybody knows you don't put an ERP system in with no customization. Every single place I ever went, and I did this for 30 plus years, we don't want to customize our system. Okay, thanks. Good. Glad that you got the newsletter on that. Okay. But now that we're actually in the implementation. So when you go to cloud, though, you have tools that can build these things. They're easy to build, right? I just finished telling you guys how easy this. Telling customers, look, just because you can, just because they gave you this really cool tool that says, I can go out there and I can build this really cool application. You really need to take a step back and say, my next upgrade is coming in 3 months or 6 months. And there's another one 3 to 6 months after that. And after that, and after that, and after that. By the time I'm done with my implementation, there's going to be 3 or 4 updates. that shift, there's a bunch of things just around that, right? There's the, my internal mindset has to shift from, I'm not going to get an update for 4 or 5 years to, I'm going to get an update in 3 or 4 months. Okay. That's the first one. And in the tools, by the way, the vendors are using to build this stuff are way more efficient than they used to be. So vendors can deliver much more significant functionality much faster than they used to. So you really need to develop the mindset of, we're going to take what the vendor delivers us out of the box, unless, and organizations that are really successful with this, and there's been some big ones like Bank of America, Wells Fargo, who went from highly customized on-premise applications successfully to the cloud, started at the CEO. We are not customizing the system. If you come to me with a request to do a customization, you better have a darn good business reason for it, because we're not doing it. End of discussion. And why? Because the business processes delivered by the vendor, for the most part, are built on GAP standards. They're built on standards you don't need. Why do people do customizations? Systems are difficult to use, right? Well, the first one was, I want this thing to look, act, and feel like my old system, so nobody has to think. They just kind of do it, right? That's a bad idea. Everybody knows it's a bad idea, but it still happens. The second one is a little bit more subtle. The systems were built to be transaction processing engines. They're very big, very complex, with tens of thousands of tables, and it's not easy to do simple stuff like add a vendor. Sometimes I got to go to 3 or 4 or 5 panels to add all the information for a vendor. So a lot of the customizations were what I'll call usability customizations, right? I'm going to give Jim a panel to go do his job, and he doesn't have to do all this crazy work. And then the third one's a little more subtle, which is, I've got a requirement that's a significant requirement, and it's on the vendor's roadmap, but I don't really know what it's going to look like yet, so I have to build something. Now, the first one is off the table, right? Because these applications are much easier to use than they used to be. The configuration capabilities of most of the UIs and the end user tools allow end users themselves, once they learn how to do it, to configure the thing to make it work the way they want it to work without writing a stitch of code. So that takes those two off the table. So now we're down to the third one, where I've got a functionality issue. And that's where we see a lot of organizations struggle. And quite frankly, we see a lot of system integrators struggle, because where did system integrators make their meat, potatoes, and their gravy, right? It was from building customizations and then maintaining them, writing code for customers that was going to be there for 10 or 15 years that required service during an upgrade, maybe regular maintenance, maybe enhancements, blah, 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 blah. It's a major revenue stream for most of the system integrators. You really have to shift that mindset away. Internally in organizations, one of the things you heard me talk about IT departments and DBAs and network administrators, I was talking to a CIO back in 2017, 2018, and she came up with this term that I've stolen, which she called a release engineer. All right. And she said, when they were going to the cloud, she said to me, she had asked me for a profile of a couple of vendors, you know, because I was still at Gartner, I was the ERP guy. She said, what's the difference between vendor A and vendor B? And then she said, so we're going to the cloud. What advice do you have for us? And I said, as much as I can tell you, and as much as you think, you're not ready for the frequency of changes you're going to be facing. It's the one thing we hear from everyone. So I went back there 1.5 years later, and she created this position because during the implementation, during the 12 months of their implementation, there were 2 updates from the vendor, 2 of them. And the second one, the first one, they kind of looked at and shrugged and went, oh, we're not even going to pay attention to it because we're busy doing our configuration. The second one had some stuff they thought they might like. And then the third one, which would have been released 6 months after their go live, they definitely wanted, but the third one was built on the first one and the second one. To get the functionality from the third one, they were either going to have to do like a massive re-implementation or figure out how to consume those. That was the first wake-up call for them, that this was not going to be the same situation they were dealing with for the last 15 years. And that is probably one of the biggest struggles that I think is the biggest challenges here. The other thing is the one I alluded to earlier, which is it would be really easy without the proper kind of governance and discipline to create an ungodly mess. I'm going to just give every power user and every department the ability to write their own code and write their own interfaces. And then I am going to be dealing with a massive endeavor every time I get an integration or a new update from a vendor, because I'm going to go back and look at all that stuff all over again. So those were the biggest challenges, I think. The other one, I think, is just part of the nature of the beast, Jim. So I used to tell people like, well, the good news is vendor ABC just wrote, you know, a brand new application, enterprise application, and they wrote 6 million lines of new code. And the bad news is they wrote 6 million lines of new code. I don't care how good you are, stuff ain't going to work. In the process of moving things to the cloud, there's a significant change element, because a lot of the vendors did decide, hey, if we could do this over again, like we built this application architecture 15, 20 years ago, if we could do this over again, we wouldn't do it that way. Knowing what we've learned in the last 15 or 20 years, we'd build it differently. We'd make it work differently. We'd build more flexibility into the architecture, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, which means that the way I used to do ABC business process, like add a vendor, manage a supply chain, even with the same vendor's application, is going to basically be different. So I would say the change, the absorption of the change, and it really kind of comes down to understanding where the value proposition is for me as an organization. The value proposition is not likely going to come from tweaking the middle of one of those business processes. It's going to come on the front end or the back end. You know, whether I'm either taking data into the system differently or I'm doing something on the back end of a business process to manage that part of the business process. The stuff that's in the core ERP, the core of the composable ERP, really shouldn't be tweaked with unless you have a really good reason for it. Now, having said all that, I was talking one time to a major consumer products manufacturer who said to me, we basically do need to break out our manufacturing supply chain because our distribution capabilities are world-class and you spent 30 years building them. Okay. That's a really good reason to do that. Now you have to go back in and say, we built this. How much of this was actually core code that came from the vendor? I'll just make up a number, 60%. And now 40% is really stuff that we built. And what I told them was, don't just go back and take the design that you built 40 years ago and use it. You really need to look at what the vendors delivered to you, because you may find that you want to build more flexibility into your own customizations that you did 20, 40 years ago. I would say those are the biggest challenges, the frequency of change and the idea that I don't really need to build the system the way I want it. I can adopt standard processes as delivered by the vendor.
You were talking a bit about customization, essentially, and it made me wonder about the industry specificity of a lot of the applications that are coming out. Infor has long been really proud of its vertical market capabilities. And then you've got other vendors who I think had them, but didn't tout them as much, that are really emphasizing them more, like SAP. A lot of them are really talking about this ability to serve vertical industries, especially with their cloud ERP. How does the composable ERP architecture maybe make that easier?
It does. And I'm going to pitch Infor a little bit here. You'll forgive me since they signed my paycheck. So you're right. Infor has had a vertical industry strategy. Now, the concept that they tout is actually valid, and I'll try to be as objective as I can here. Well, let's say you're an automotive manufacturer, right? If you buy a vanilla ERP system, there are certain things that every automotive manufacturer is going to build out into that system. I'll just, advanced shipping notices, ASNs, and other things that they have to build. What Infor has done is they've said, okay, if we're building basically a core system, the finance supply chain stuff's going to be standard, but for aerospace and defense, for automotive, for like a high-tech manufacturer, for example, they're going to do certain build-outs. We deliver a package of those build-outs with the cloud as standard build-outs to the application portfolio. Now, can customers build them? Sure, they could. But by Infor delivering it as part of the vertical industry strategy, it's something the customers don't have to do. So they can add, capabilities if they want to, but now it's a plus as opposed to something they need to function in that vertical. You've got big chunks, like, for example, even like Workday, and let's take public sector and healthcare, right? Public sector and healthcare were dominated by two vendors, PeopleSoft and Lawson. Those were the two big players. Well, PeopleSoft is now Workday and Oracle, and Lawson is now Infor. So both of those vendors, when you take a look at that, there are certain major capabilities that, like, say, a healthcare enterprise needs that probably nobody else is going to use. Oracle's built that into the core product. Workday's built that into their core product. We've built it into a product that we also sell to public sector, that we also sell to bank and whatnot, but we deliver it to our healthcare customers with some of those capabilities built out. I'm not going to give you the impression that you're a healthcare customer, you buy one of our Cloud Suite healthcare products and there's nothing you do to it. You're going to do stuff to it. But we try to give you at least a package of things that you don't have to build, because we know that almost every healthcare customer is going to build them. And so when you take a look at it from that perspective, it's along the same lines of we're delivering capabilities that are standard for any industry. In this case, not just a GAP standard or a supply chain management standard. It's basically standard for that industry. And then you get to build what you want on top of it. The idea is to allow the customer to spend their resources doing real value add, instead of having to make something just work for their organization and the vertical that they're in.
Does this get around the problem that we've been hearing for a long time about multi-tenant SaaS in particular, that, you know, it's so generic or it's so standardized, you can't customize it or it's hard to? Is this like extensions, essentially? Is this a way to kind of have your cake and eat it too, maybe?
So there were a couple of major concerns regarding cloud ERP. Okay, the first one was data. Do I have access to my data? I don't have access to the database schema. Well, vendors basically, you know, the first vendors that went to the cloud didn't do a really good job managing that. But now most vendors provide really good means for customers to access their own data. The second is security. Now, the ironic thing, and Gartner wrote a lot of research about this, is that any cloud platform like Microsoft or Amazon or Google, they can spend a lot more on security than any one company can spend on security. So it's actually a much more secure environment than most private data centers would be. The other one is this issue of, okay, so I don't get access to my database, but do I actually do customizations and modifications, and what does composable ERP give me? Composable ERP gives me the ability to have a core system that functions for my business and spend my resources on value add. That value add piece comes from user experiences, okay? Mm-hmm. And there's been a lot of studies done on that, that the real value add in an organization or an application is in the user experience, whether it's an internal stakeholder or an external stakeholder, like a customer or a vendor or whatever. What makes Amazon Amazon, right? It's the experience of being able to shop online and see all kinds of things. I can see all kinds of products that were bought with this. I can read reviews, da 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 da. You'll even find that there are vendors out there that sell things through Amazon. You'll see on the Amazon page, like, not sold by Amazon. This is a partner of Amazon. That concept of, you know, the customizations, quote unquote, being something that I had to do to make the system usable, really isn't true anymore. I'm doing customizations to provide an additional capability. That's why when we first coined the phrase that became composable ERP, we called it enterprise business capabilities. So there's an analogy that Denise came up with in the first note on the fourth era of ERP. And it was a great analogy, which is, if you think about music, right? Mm-hmm. And we used to have a presentation, and I had a presentation slide that has a cassette tape with a pencil through one of the spindles, right? Because what did everybody use a cassette tape to do? You had to twist that spindle when the tape unwound. So Paul found this great graphic of a cassette tape that was unwound with a pencil through one of the spindles. And the point was, 20 years ago, when you bought an ERP system, you had a certain set of problems you were trying to solve, which was data inconsistency, process inconsistency, non-integrated siloed systems. The CFO or the CEO would say, well, how many units did we produce and what was our margin, and get a different answer if they asked, you know, manufacturing, finance, or whoever. So they solved that set of problems. The problems organizations have today and moving forward into the future is not the same set of problems. You know, the core ERP suites have basically solved that set of problems. Now the set of problems is, how do I deal with the fact that I've got a marketplace where applications emerge at the drop of a hat and change the way everybody does business? And how do I basically become agile enough to adapt to that environment? That's what composable ERP gives you. Composable ERP gives you the ability to say, I've got a core set of processes that work. I know they're going to work, just like Uber's back-end processes work. But now I've got the ability with this platform and this new composable architecture to say, when there's a new and emergent way of doing business or executing some kind of a process or some kind of capability, I now have the ability to develop an application, integrate an application, mm-hmm. or deploy an application much faster than I ever have, and be really confident that it's going to be reliable and work because the back-end processes are rock solid. That's the big thing. So the challenge that composable ERP helps people adapt to is this whole environment of changing applications rapidly, changing capabilities in the market rapidly, and giving big businesses and even medium-sized businesses the ability to function properly and still have the confidence they can adapt to those as they emerge in the market.
I want to thank both of you for your time today. This has been interesting.
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Dave.
Anytime.
Thanks, Mike.
Happy to chat with you, Dave. Anytime, Jim. Anytime. Yep.